Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. Oh, it's time once again for the What's Your Weird Story podcast. But it's not just a regular What's Your Weird Story podcast. It's the annual What's Your Weird Story podcast Weird News Roundup. Every year at the last episode of the year, we like to do a wrap-up of some of the weird news that we find throughout the year. And 2024 has been an exceptional weird year, exceptionally weird year news-wise. Not new is me being stumbling over my own words. Who's me? I'm one of your hosts, Adam Beebe. And with me, as always, is my good friend, my old friend, my dear friend, my best friend, my hombre, my man, Mr. Barry Johnston, the smiling sensei. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great, professor. I'd like to add best-selling author.
That's right.
To that description. I have a book that's come out I wasn't even aware that it came out, but it came out, and I've sold 5 million copies already. The title is Abduction, Probing, Pleasure, A Sensei's Tale. And wow. All I got to say is wow. You gifted me this book. It came in the mail. And I laughed so hard. I just was like, what the hell is this? And I'm kind of, you know, thumbing through it. I'm like, it's an actual book, man.
Yep.
This
yep.
is.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So what it is, this is not it's a one-off book. You can't find it anywhere. It's not an actual 5 million. It's a one and done only. But it's one of those, as much as I hate AI, it's an AI generated book.
It's great.
And I went onto a website. I filled out the form about putting in various information about Barry and about what kind of a book he is, as a memoir, what is his interest. Of course, I put martial arts, Britpop, UFOs, and erotic encounters with alien species, and the quest and his desire to have sex with aliens. And you put in his wife's name, the fact that he's got X many kids, he's his best friend, the professor, Adam Beebe, of course. You put in, you know, some of his strange quirks and personal habits, like he likes to scratch his privates and then smell the fingers afterwards. stuff like this. So read some of those chapter titles, because
it's a 240-page
book.
Yeah.
The chapter titles and everything. I haven't read it, but I thumbed through it a little bit, but you'll have to tell me how it is. Some of these chapter titles are just too.
Chapter 1, In Search of the Unseen, My Dual Life as a Sensei and UFO Researcher. Beyond the Stars, A Sensei's Journey into the Unknown. Family Ties and Cosmic Yearnings, Balancing Life and Martian Dreams. Best Friends and Brains, Teaming Up with the Professor Adam Beebe. Birds and Bees, The Connection Between Earthly Love and Cosmic Desire. I mean, and then I got to read
subheading.
The reference, like the, here we go. This is Christmas brain happening. Quotes
From the back cover?
Yeah, from the back cover. A daring exploration of the unknown, wrapped in the wisdom of ancient martial arts teaching, Barry Johnston unravels the narrative that is as informative as it is titillating. That's from Martial Arts Monthly. I mean, it's just, it's really quite incredible. And we got such a good laugh out of it, man. Thank you so much. It's just, and I am going to go through and read and see kind of what saga unfolds. So that's a great gift. And anybody that is looking for something like that, definitely do some research and find that for somebody, because it's absolutely a great gift, man.
Yeah, man. Maybe we'll do a we'll have you read chapters. We can have that do that. So have you read chapters on for special episodes or every once in a while to fill it?
That'd
be fun. I also did one for our special correspondent and resident Bigfoot expert and voice of the listener, Mr. Jeff Hubbard. His was, it was called, let me find it real quick. His was called, Cryptid Encounters of the Spicy Kind, Saucy Adventures with Sasquatch and Salsa in Exotic Oklahoma Locations by Jeff Hubbard Esquire. And of course his was, instead of, you know, the things I put in about him were his, how he loves to cook and make his own salsa.
Yes.
How he loves El Charro as much as I do, how he, researches, how he's a lawyer, but he also research and a family man, but he also researches Bigfoot and specializes in, historical accounts of erotic encounters with Bigfoots and their and other cryptids' mating habits, and how he also strides to one day join a group of Bigfoot so that he can personally endure an erotic encounter with Bigfoot.
Amazing! Oh, so good, so good. Well, yeah, I mean, that just is kind of capping what has been such a weird year this year. And I mean, it runs the gamut how strange this year was. And as we were kind of speaking before, a lot of it wasn't really brought up very much. You kind of had to look for it. Mm-hmm. But man, there are some really wild stories from this year that I'm pretty excited about.
Definitely. All sorts of things, from medical and scientific discovery to UFOs, obviously, all over to, you know, drones in New Jersey.
Yeah.
It's been a lot, and that's just been recent. So do you want to kick it off or shall
I? Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, let's go with the drones. I've got the – this is taken from the AP, and let's see. I'm trying to look and see how new this was. I think this was like, this is a couple, let's see. Oh, this is December 20th. Title is Mystery Drone Sightings Continue in New Jersey and Across the U.S. Here's what we know. A large number of mysterious drones have been reported flying over New Jersey and across the eastern U.S., sparking speculation and concerns over where did they come from. In response, the Federal Aviation Administration on Wednesday and Thursday temporarily banned drone flights in 22 areas of New Jersey and 30 areas in New York, mostly in and around New York City and Long Island, where critical infrastructure is located. FAA officials said federal security agencies requested the flight restrictions, which are effective through mid-January. The FBI and Homeland Security Department and state agencies have been investigating, but officials say there has been nothing so far to suggest any drones have posed a national security or public safety threat. Authorities say many of the drone sightings have actually been legal drones, manned aircraft, helicopters, and even STARS. I mean, they don't know what they are, but they're saying they aren't something. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, that's kind of become their line, you know?
Right.
Like with the Tic Tac and from earlier this year, jellyfish,
right?
UFO. That's it. We don't know what it is, but it's not ours, you know.
Right.
And that's, you know, another thing. Apparently, these drones are not being detected by regular means.
Right.
You know, it could be that they're just too low. It could be anything, really.
Right. It just, you know, it's so weird that we live in this time. We've talked about this before where the slow leaks started to come out a few years ago about the tapes and about all this UAP activity, and it kind of flew under the radar because not a lot of people were paying attention to it. I don't think a lot of people really cared. But now we're in a situation here where it's like these things were spotted in China. They've been spotted all over the world, and we don't know what they are, but they do think that they're, you know, nothing to be worried about. I mean, sure, but let's find out exactly what they are. That's kind of my thing. Why don't we figure out what exactly they are and let the people know what they are so people aren't freaking out? But it's a strange time that we live in. If this would have happened when we were in the 80s, yeah, I mean, people would be losing their shit, you know. But with the drones and all the things that people have access to, you know, they can kind of blame it on something that makes some relevant, you know, relative sense. But I don't know, man. I'm still, jury's still out on this. It's really interesting.
The drones are still they're not perfected. I don't know if you saw this on the news, but I believe it was just right before Christmas. There was a display in Florida that they were using drones to light up, and some of the drones lost control, and one of the drones flew into a crowd and it hit a young boy, seven years old, straight in the chest. And he had to be rushed to the hospital, and it was not a good day. He was like, I think he technically had died, but then they brought him back, but he was in a coma.
Oh, wow.
Last I had heard. So,
wow.
Yeah, you know, I think this drone technology is just, I think it is human origin. I don't necessarily believe that it's extraterrestrial, these particular drones. You know, I think we talked about this last week, where some people think that, you know, these are basically kind of like some group that a manufacturer that has made some drones that are trying to market to the military by showing them how they can go undetected and do stuff like that. So,
right. Well, yeah, who knows? It's definitely. Definitely interesting. So yeah, I'm sure we'll find out more about that. But yeah, it definitely, we're living in weird times. That's all I can say.
Yep, we are indeed. Speaking of weird times, this is a weird story, a weird health story from September from the Sun, the U.S. Sun. There's a magic trick E number found in Doritos can turn skin invisible, giving scientists a window into the body. So there is a there is a chemical that is called tartrazine, T-A-R-T-R-A-Z-I-N-E. It's also known as FD and C yellow 5 or E-102, mixed with water and rubbed onto the shaved stomachs and scalps of lab mice, made the skin translucent.
Wow.
They could look through the skin and see the organs, and they could see the blood vessels and all of that going on. And this is a common thing in a lot of like chips and Doritos and other foods. It's a color, but it does this trick. Who knows how this was discovered, but it's apparently is at Stanford University, and So this thing is, this E number is safe for human consumption, but has been linked to hyperactivity, according to the NHS. It hasn't been tested at the time of this report. It hadn't been tested on human skin, which is about 10 times thicker than the skin on a mouse. But, you know, if this is some way adaptable, you know, then that would be a way to look inside human bodies without actually cutting them open.
Wow.
If they could figure out a way to, you know, make it amplify it. Or at least, you know, look at veins and stuff that are just that are not on super deep into the
subdermal stuff, you know, cysts and things like that, or tumors, man. Wow.
Yeah. Bizarre.
Yeah.
So bizarre.
I know Mountain Dew has yellow number 5 in it, I believe. I know that Canada banned a lot of that stuff.
Yes.
A lot of the things that we put in our food.
There's a lot of things in Europe and other countries that are banned in foods that the United States is like okay with, apparently.
Yeah, we're fine. Yeah, we'll be just
because
don't worry about it.
It's no big deal,
right? don't worry about it. It's all good. Here's one. I don't know if you saw this or not, but this is taken from it's icmglt.org, and it is NASA snaps photos over underwater shark cano eruption. Did you hear about this?
What?
Okay. In Kivichi, a submarine volcano in the southwest Pacific Ocean, is home to several species of sharks and fish that can withstand the extreme environment. So these creatures have adapted to their environment. They are a mutant species.
Mm-hmm.
And an underwater volcano surrounded by sharks sounds like something out of a science fiction movie, but Sharkano is a very real, and according to new images captured by satellite, it's erupting. NASA's operational land imager, I got to get closer to the screen because my glasses aren't picking this up. The NASA's operational land imager 2, located aboard the Landsat 9 satellite, took striking snapshots of the submarine volcano called Kivichi, erupting earlier this month. Amid the inky blue waters of the southwest Pacific Ocean, a greenish cloud of super hot acidic water billows from the submarine volcano. Named after a sea god of the indigenous Gatoki and Vangunu people, Kivichi is located about 15 miles south of Vangunu Island, part of the Solomon Islands east of Papua New Guinea. It's one of the most active underwater volcanoes in this part of the Pacific and has been erupting nearly continuously since 1939, when people living in the nearby islands first recorded an eruption, according to the Smithsonian National Museum and Natural History. The volcano is also known by the name of Rayo Tekvichi, which means Kivichi's oven, a fitting moniker for the superheated lava stream, particulates, rock fragments, and sulfur that sometimes reach the water's surface. Scientists believe that the volcano's summit is roughly 65 feet below the water. Kivichi's base on the seafloor, about 3/4 of a mile below the sea's level per NASA. Over its recorded history, Kivichi has created a handful of ephemeral islands that have been spanned up to a kilometer in length, but the ocean waves have always eroded and washed these islands away. It also produces dramatic something eruptions in which the superheated magma and water interact to create a violent, steamy explosions. And I'm looking at the, they have a picture of some of the fish and the sharks, and it looks like they're hammerheads, and there's some other species as well. Anyway, it's wild. It's interesting. It's amazing that creatures can live in waters that are apparently very hot. They didn't even know that they existed up until now. So that's pretty interesting.
Well, here is another interesting animal story, wildlife story, and this is from May from the theguardian.com. Orangutan seen treating wound with medical herb in a first for wildlife animals.
Okay,
so the high intelligence of orangutans has long been recognized, partly due to their practical skills such as using tools to recover seeds and forage for insects. But a new research suggests that the primate has another handy skill in its repertoire, applying medical herbs.
Wow.
I mean, dude. Researchers have observed a male Sumatran orangutan treating an open facial wound with sap and chewed leaves from a plant known to have an anti-inflammatory and pain-relieving properties.
Wow. I've heard that, I think it's the orangutan or maybe another species, they say that they're in the equivalent of like the Bronze Age, like where they are like they're able to make tools and like that is fascinating. We don't know enough about exactly what's going on there. I'm always struck by the primates and just how human-like they are. And, you know, the whole missing link thing, like, we're related. And they are interesting and very smart, intellectual creatures, I believe, you know? That's wild, yeah, man.
There's a definite cognitive ability to do that. And we know that animals have sentience. We know that they think. We know that they feel. Mm-hmm. And they have their own emotions. And, you know, while they might not be as complicated or complex, rather, as ours, you know, they have their ways of communicating, and they have feelings, and they have thoughts and emotions, and you can see that if you've ever had a pet, you know, or interacted, and it's not just the basic, you know, survival skill things. It's beyond that, and especially the more complicated creatures, like, you know, and mammals particularly, you know, but. Like, yeah, so according to this, they've been seen rubbing chewed up plants on their arms and legs, the same that was used by muscles to by humans to treat sore muscles, and they've been known to chew plants that have known to treat worm infections.
Wow.
And applied insects to wounds.
Wow.
So this is the first time that an animal has been observed, though, treating an open wound with a substance known to have medical properties. And that's a whole other, you know, thing. That's not an instinct. That's thinking. That's
trial reasoning. And error. Absolutely, right. Man.
The team that witnesses offered insight into the findings near, like, human origins. So the treatment of this kind was first recorded in a medical manuscript in 2200 BC.
Wow.
So, yeah, it definitely shows the basic cognitive capabilities that you need to come up with a behavior like this. We present at this time our most common ancestor ancestor, most likely. Our last common ancestor. I'm trying to read a quote here, and I'm not doing a good job. But still, like, this is a huge thing. It's huge. It's huge that we used to think that what separated us from the beast, it was our ability to use tools. Well, we've learned that animals use tools, especially primates, but also right. like crows and ravens,
right. Right.
they can use tools.
Yeah.
You know, and like elephants can use tools as well, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Basic tools, you know, they're not using, they didn't come up with their own hand drill, but they're using, you know, sticks and stuff as tools to
right.
accomplish a goal. There's just, it used to be, well, you know, obviously people would say that, you know, well, medicine, you know, this is the thing, and arts and creative and using reason and logic and discovering things. But we know that even primates do trial and error type stuff.
Right.
And, you know, and some animals, they learn from mistakes. They learn over time. And that's another thing that shows, you know, cognitive ability. So it's just another thing to show us that, you know, we may think we're on top of the food chain, we may think we're the best and all of that, but we are simply just other animals that at a different stage of development,
right?
And with, you know, because we learned how to hunt and gather,
yeah.
We learned how to separate, we learned how to, when we learned how to farm,
yeah.
You know, we learned that so you don't have to spend as much time gathering. You can farm.
Yep.
You can then you, also you don't have to spend as much time hunting once you domesticate animals.
Right.
And when you've got time saved from farming and raising domesticated animals, which is, you know, if you've ever known a farmer, that's a funny statement because they're the hardest working people you're ever going to meet. But there is time for others to. That's how we developed culture. That's how right. we developed
philosophy and
right and things of the mind and things of art and beauty and civilization and governments and rules and all these things that we make exclusively human. But turns out that a lot of those things, in other ways, are done by other animals.
Yeah.
You know, it's yeah. just not as the way we do it. And we also, our way of communication developed
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
And we developed more practical or impractical tools, however you want to look at them.
Yeah.
So who knows, man?
Yeah.
A couple thousand years, you know, the orangutan internet will be around.
Right, right.
And, yeah, maybe people will.
Right,
won't,
yeah.
Know?
Yeah,
we're, that's the beginning. Planet of the Apes could be coming, you know.
Right,
it's
yeah.
certainly a thing, so.
Yeah, we're
so we don't wipe them out first.
Yeah. We're watching something evolve in front of our eyes. It's pretty amazing, man. Yeah, that's pretty yeah. yeah, we don't know enough. We definitely don't know.
We've got to give them that space in the wild to do that stuff. We
yeah,
can't.
Yeah.
kill them all. We can't yep. take all of their land. We can't do all of that stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, now will that actually happen? Probably not. But
yep.
in theory, you yep. know,
yeah.
In our perfect Star Trek world that I always dream about, we would allow the other creatures to advance and evolve at their
yep.
at their own rate and
absolutely
their own way and not fuck them up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's a bit of the evolution. This is taken from the BBC. Google unveils mind-boggling quantum computing chip. Google has unveiled a new chip which claims takes 5 minutes to solve a problem that would currently take the world's fastest supercomputer 10 septillion years to complete. The chip is the latest development in a field known as quantum computing, which is attempting to use the principles of particle physics to create a new type of mind-boggling powerful computer. Google says its new quantum chip, dubbed Willow, incorporates key breakthroughs of paves the way to a useful large-scale quantum computer. However, experts say Willow is, for now, a largely experimental device, meaning a quantum computer powerful enough to solve a wide range of real-world problems is still years away and $1 billion away. The quantum quandary. The quantum computer works in a fundamentally different way to the computer in your phone or your laptop. They harness quantum mechanics, the strange behavior of ultra-tiny particles, to crack problems far faster than traditional computers. That is mind-blowing. I heard somebody talk about this, and they were telling how it's not using ones and zeros anymore. It's something completely different, which is, you know, using the quantum physics or whatever to do their problem solving. I don't understand it, but it's sounds like it could be, this could blow the lid off a lot of things. And, we're going to be stepping into yet a new reality here pretty soon.
It's just, it's that thing. It's scary, you know, because AI has gone just this past year.
Yeah.
Has just gone, increased its ability so rapidly. And once we have the computers, like the quantum computers and the next generation of computers, it's just it's scary, dude. It's scary. It's like, yeah. I want it to be hopeful for humanity, but at the same time, it's humanity doesn't always engender the most hopeful, doesn't engender a lot of hopefulness in the creations that it makes. You know, we look at stuff like The Matrix or Terminator, and you know,
there are some people out there that think that this is what humans were, however you want to look at it, put on the earth to do. We were put on the earth to create things, and that this was like the ultimate goal, is to create something that is beyond ourselves. I worry that we're going to create something that we will become an expendable part of the process, you know, and it is. I also worry about jobs, and I worry about people's livelihoods, and how do we make that transition now? Because we're kind of already seeing it in a way where, like, what do you do when all of your needs are met and there's no jobs to be had?
Yep. Do you pay for the things you need?
Right. And what do we do as a species? What is our next thing? I think in a lot of ways, like, you know, the human is designed to work.
Yep.
And it brings satisfaction. It brings so many, you know, things like in life where you become enlightened by doing difficult things. And when difficult things are taken away, and what do we do? It's an interesting and a scary proposition. So,
yeah, I mean, hopefully what we'll do is we'll use those things, these new technologies, for the benefit of humankind, and not just for ripping off artists and, you know, making, you know, AI art that emulates other people's works or steals other people's works, or, you know, facsimilates musicians to make a new song sound like the original artist wrote it and did it, performed it. Hopefully, you know, put it towards medicine, put it towards science. Let's put it towards solving problems like, you know, food, like population and, you know, the environment. Let's put it towards getting off the planet and going and exploring space.
Right.
You know, let's do something like that. Let's do something hopeful. Let's try to get, you know, spread humanity out and let us go out into the stars and hopefully do it in a respectful way and not just become like space locust or some kind of disease on other planets.
Right.
You know, just wiping, coming in and wiping out all the indigenous life. Hopefully we can not, we can do that. We can avoid doing that, but,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's one of those things. We need hope, you know, we need to find the hope in things. And, yeah. You know, it's just,
yeah, hopefully it's there, you know?
Yeah. So, here is, let's skip that one. Oh, here's one that you might be interested in. This is a true crime story. And this is from NPR, and they told insurers a bear damaged their car, but it wasn't a bear. It was a person in a costume. So four residents from the Los Angeles area were arrested, and this was November 14. They were arrested the week after, earlier this week being that week, after an investigation by the California Department of Insurance revealed that allegedly a bear had attacked these cars, and this was insurance fraud. They're trying to get $141,839 for the damages by this quote unquote bear. So for the damages, so there was four people, and they they said that they were going. They said that. Sorry, I'm trying to get the information here. There's a great picture of the bear costume. But basically, they said that a bear had attacked their cars. In January, suspects claimed that a bear entered their 2010 Rolls-Royce Ghost.
Oh, okay.
And caused interior damage while it was parked at the Lake Arrowhead region in the San Bernardino Mountains area. And it's apparently known to have a large black bear population there. The suspect provided video footage of the alleged incident. And to an unnamed insurance company, which department has since posted online. So you can actually go find this. The video shows a furry figure entering through the side door, climbing around the back seat, and clawing and crawling all about, leaving scratch marks all over the leather seats and the door. Upon further investigation of the video, the investigation team determined that the bear was actually a person in a bear costume. Detectives found two more claims involving the same suspects, and then the suspects also provided video footage of their bear incidents that were basically the same as the first. So the detectives executed a search warrant and found the bear costume, complete with a furry snooted head, paws, and metal tools in the shape of claws, in a suspect's home.
Wow.
Yes. So there was a light brown bear costume that was not like the black bears that are only the only wild bears in the area of California. So yeah. So those people got arrested. That's funny. That's
pretty amazing, man. People are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to pull that off, you know. I mean, Lord.
With a Rolls Royce nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, none. That was just one of the cars. There are other cars. And
that's amazing. That's too funny.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one. This is from the New York Post, and it's now this has been, I think recently I've seen some stuff where this has been debunked, or they think it has been. But nevertheless, this was from back in May 19th, from the New York Post. NASA scientists detect evidence of a parallel universe where time runs backwards. In a scenario straight out of Twilight Zone, a group of NASA scientists working on an experiment in Antarctica have detected evidence of a parallel universe where the rules of physics are the opposite of our own, according to a report. The concept of a parallel universe has been around since the early 1960s, mostly in the minds of fans of sci-fi TV shows and comics. But now a cosmic ray detection experiment has found particles that could be from a parallel realm that has, or that was born in the Big Bang theory. The experts used a giant balloon to carry NASA's Antarctic Impulsive Transient Antenna, or ANITA, high above the Antarctica with the frigid dry air, provided the perfect environment with little to no radio noise to distort its findings. A constant wind of high energy particles constantly arrives on the Earth from outer space. Low-energy subatomic neutrinos with a mass close to zero can pass completely through Earth, but higher-energy objects are stopped by the solid matter of the planet, according to the report. That means that high-energy particles can only be detected coming down from space, but the team's ANITA detected heavier particles, so-called tau neutrinos, which come up from the Earth. The finding implies that these particles are actually traveling backwards in time, suggesting evidence of a parallel universe, according to the Daily Star. Wow. Interesting. So,
explain that a little bit, if you can.
I think they're just seeing some particles that are acting in reverse, according to what we understand. And so I don't understand the whole, like, passing through and stopping at the matter and all that kind of stuff. But, I don't know. I know that there's some weird shit going on with Antarctica. There's a lot of people that think that there's, like, some ancient shit that exists under the ice and stuff like that too. So I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. Parallel universes are always interesting to me, but, like I said, I saw an article not that long ago that said that they think this is bullshit. So
okay,
maybe NASA got it wrong.
Who knows, man? Well, yeah, I mean, they're looking. They're trying to find.
Right.
That's wild, though.
Yeah.
Well, I've got one. This is this is from June 26th. Another NPR story starts as another monolith. Do you remember the monolith? Found near Las Vegas. So first it was Utah, then Romania and California, Spain, Wales and Paraguay. In 2020. Wow. Man, seems so long ago. Right there. There was the metallic monoliths that popped up around 2020 that had everybody confused and wondering what was going on. And of course, it was eventually figured out to be some kind of a artistic creation, and then copycats. But there another one. Was in Las Vegas that popped up. Police don't know who was responsible for the monolith or how it got there, just like the others. So trying to see what else. Basically on June 17th, Las Vegas authorities announced that a local volunteer search and rescue team had spotted a shiny metallic monolith near Gas Peak in the Desert National Wildlife Refuge north of the city. So it's 6 feet tall, 5 inches and 13 inches wide. It has three faces. So it's three-sided, not a four-sided.
Uh-huh.
The monolith is made of folded sheet metal and held together with rebar and concrete. See, 4 days later, the police department removed the monolith due to, quote, public safety concerns and environmental concerns. So, so who is behind the monolith? That still remains a mystery. They still were, you know, some people think it was to do with his late artist, John McCracken, but, you know, he's dead, so he couldn't have done it themselves. But, you know, people think that the artist collective known as the Most Famous Artist, who took credit for the 2020 monolith, might be part of it, but still it's unknown at this time. So
interesting.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
that's fun.
There it is. It's more monoliths, more mystery.
Yeah.
It's fun mystery, you know, and it's interesting that we had the space. It's spaced out, but still it's, you know, it's with all the other weirdness that's happened this year, it's just fun to have more.
Yeah.
Why not just throw in monolith in?
For sure.
Just for fun.
Yeah, that year that those were popping up all over the place, it was like, it was cool. It was like, what does this mean? What is this all about? Well, 'cause
that was, you know, that was the plague year.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it was very, very unusual.
Yeah. Really cool. Okay, here's one from the New York Post. Pope Francis to open five sacred portals on Christmas Eve for a ritual that's never been done before.
What?
Yeah. Pope Francis will commence a, which I guess has already happened, it's already started. Pope Francis will commence a centuries-long Catholic tradition on Christmas Eve and introduced a first-time historical addition to the holy ritual. Starting December 24th, the pontiff will open a series of five holy doors throughout the Vatican, including St. Peter's Basilica, plus Rome's three other basilicas to commence next year's Catholic Church Jubilee, a joyful commemoration of faith that normally occurs every 25 years. The door at St. Peter's was sealed shut by a wall of bricks since the Jubilee year of Divine Mercy in 2016. On December 2nd, those were ripped down to ready the door for opening as a part of the rite of recognition. After that, the Christmas evil or Eve, sorry, evil, the Christmas
Freudian slip,
yeah,
perhaps?
Yeah, the Christmas Eve ritual. Pope Francis will open a symbolic door inside the Roman prison Rebibbia on December 26th for the feast of Stephen. I think of the prison. Yeah, yada yada yada. In order, The objective of opening the doors later this month is to usher in a year renewed in hope as Christians find Christ as the door of our salvation. Pope Francis wrote in a proclamation of the bullet of indication for the 2025 year-long celebration. On December 29th, Pope Francis will open the holy door at Rome's Basilica, St. John Lateran, of which he is also the bishop. Then on New Year's Day, also a holy day of obligation, the Solemnity of Mary, the holy door at the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major outside the Vatican in Rome will be opened. Lastly, Sunday, January 5th, Pope Francis will open the fifth and final holy door at the Papal Basilica of St. Paul outside of the walls of Rome. The Catholic tradition of celebrating a jubilee began in the 1300s and was initially stretched out every 100 years rather than 25. For centuries, the holy doors have been opened at the four Roman basilicas to usher in memorable years for the church. In modern times, Pope John Paul II also celebrated a jubilee in 2000 at the time writing that the significance of the holy doors pertaining to one's faith. Very, you know, the Catholics are very ritualistic. There was a lot of speculation as to what these portals would inhabit. Some people were even going out and saying that there's like, you know, maybe you would step in, actually like step into a parallel type universe type of situation. It's interesting because the Catholics are, I believe they have some that like one of the largest, They retain some of the oldest evidence of things that go stretch back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So it's interesting.
They've got archive. Are you talking about the archives?
Yeah, the archives.
Vatican Library.
Some people think things, they have the bones of Jesus. Like, there's all kinds of stuff that is just, it's interesting, man. So,
yeah. Well, it's interesting enough. Here's another story connected to the Catholic Church, but one Catholic Church in particular. This is from WKRC Local 12. It was December 27th, just a few days ago. And this is a St. Mary's County, Maryland. A man was arrested after he allegedly poured whiskey into holy water during a Christmas Mass at a Catholic church.
Oops.
According to the St. Mary's County Sheriff's Office, 56-year-old Thomas Campbell Balling Von Goetz was, I almost wanted to add a junior because he just needed more names in there, was taken into custody after two alleged incidents at churches, which police said disrupted religious services and enraged citizens. Authorities wrote that Von Goetz, it's G-O-E-T-Z, Von Goetz entered the Holy Angels Catholic Church in Avenue, Maryland, around 5 p.m. on Christmas Eve and approached the altar. After dropping an onion in the altar, after dropping an onion in the aisles, police said Von Goetz disturbed the peace of those attending the Mass before being followed out by another individual who wished to ensure that he was leaving the property. Once outside, however, authorities wrote that the suspect assaulted the individual by throwing tangerines at them. Von Goetz threw tangerines at the person who was trying to make sure he left. Later that night at midnight Mass at the St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Leonardtown, Maryland, Von Goetz turned up with a bottle of whiskey and allegedly disrupted the service by pouring it into the holy water before threatening to harm the people, parishioners. I couldn't get it out. Man. Sorry.
It's that kind of day.
That kind of day. The year is winding down. My brain is already shutting down and getting ready for the holiday reboot. So, so while being escorted out by other attendees, Von Goetz allegedly attempted to hit other individuals with the bottle. The authorities wrote that Von Goetz was detained until deputies arrived and he was taken to an area hospital for a medical evaluation. He was arrested on the 26th and charged with the following: second-degree assault, disorderly conduct, defacing religious property, religious crime against a group, obstructing a religious exercise, threat of mass violence, which is, that's a funny thing because, you know, of mass being in the Catholic Church, mass, the service is called mass, so threat of mass violence, and disturbing the peace. So then he was taken to jail and he was, you know, waiting to, you know, for the judge to be, you know, but that's, I mean, it's funny But it's also sad, you know, I mean, threatening people with violence is not cool. You know, it sounds funny, but then, you know, really for the people that were there, that wasn't a fun thing for them to be, you know, have to go through that. But it definitely made for a weird and memorable Christmas mass.
Oh, sure. Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Don't hit people. Don't assault people. You know, throwing tangerines, dropping an onion in the aisle is the weirdest part. That's the weirdest part to me.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, that's the weirdest part. It's not necessarily strange. Throwing tangerines at people.
Right.
Because, you know, that's kind of a citrus is kind of a Christmas thing, Christmassy thing.
Right.
You know.
What does the onion mean?
What does the onion mean?
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And I think that that's, you know, 2024 in a nutshell. Oh. What does the onion mean?
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. There's been so many weird stories. You know, not that this has anything to do with our lane here, but the whole Puff Daddy situation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all kinds of stuff coming out about that, which is just wild stuff, man. Kind of leads down the Epstein road and all the craziness, man. There was an article that I had. This is a highly debated subject here, and this is totally unscripted. So the way this has kind of gone here, we've kind of been touching on a lot of church stuff. But my last article that I wanted to talk about is the Shroud of Turon, which I had sent you a video on this subject. So this is a subject that you and I have a lot of history with. Of course, when we were growing up, the Shroud of Turon, or Turin, if people don't know, it's the cloth that they believe that Jesus was buried in or encased in. And they, you know, back in the day, they sent this thing off to get carbon dated, and it came back to like the 1300s, and so people were like, okay, well, it's not real, you know, somebody had fabricated it. Well, then this is the most looked at artifact, I think, in history, and they keep on trying to figure this out. And so this is from an article that I found on patternsofevidence.com. It's says new X-ray tests date the Turin shroud to the time of Jesus. It says new scientific methods. For centuries, the Shroud of Turin has captivated the minds of the faithful as well as skeptics. This ancient linen cloth bearing the image of a crucified man is believed by many to be the burial shroud of Jesus Christ himself. Measuring 14 feet long by 3.5 feet wide, this burial cloth wrapped the corpse and encoded the image of a tortured man who was scourged with crown of thorns, crucified and pierced by a spear in the chest, according to the Heritage Journal. As the single most studied archaeological object in the world, the shroud's authenticity has long been debated. Now, cutting-edge scientific methods are shedding new light on this enigmatic relic, suggesting it may indeed be from 2,000 years ago. They talk about the X-ray machine that they used here. The shroud first appeared in the West in 1354. Currently, it resides at the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist in Turin, Italy. Analysis from the 1980s dated the shroud from the 1300s. New X-rays dating analysis tells a different story. Recent findings by a team of scientists in the southern Italy suggest that the shroud does actually date back to the time of Christ. The researchers also propose a theory explaining why the previous dating assigned the relic's origin may be inaccurate. Basically, what they did was they took a piece of the cloth that was it was fixed, I guess, at that time, which dates back to the 1300s. Now, they've also found that there's the blood. They've tested the blood, and it came back as I think it's AB positive or something like that. It's like one of the. It's AB positive. That is it's a rare blood type. That is it's a Middle Eastern blood type. The story that I sent you, they were talking about. They've tried to recreate this thing, and they can't do it. And I was watching the film. They said that the image is burnt into the cloth, or it's embedded within the stitching of the cloth. Mm-hmm. And they said that in order to it's actually a 3D version vision or a photo. And if you they said that in order to do that, you would have to have all of the power of all the X-ray machines in the world go off at a nanosecond to imprint this this into the cloth. It's fascinating. It makes you wonder, like, wow, how were they able? If this is fabricated, if this was something that people did back then, how would the technology be around? Also, it kind of goes to my theory that maybe Jesus was an alien, because God knows how that happened. You know what I mean? It's
no pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. It's very interesting, man, and it's fascinating. I don't know. It's just it came across my radar. I was on YouTube one day and I looked at it and I was like, wow, that's really, really interesting. They've done some 3D renderings of the image that are pretty, you know, if you know whether or not you believe it or not, but they look pretty cool. So
it's one of those things, one of those great mysteries the shroud is, because basically like every 20 years or so they'll come out with the new after discovering new stuff and say, oh, it's real, or we don't know how it's done real, or it's completely or yeah. It's definitely a fake or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's so much studies that has been done to it over the past, you know, 50, 60 years,
yeah.
Especially.
Yeah.
As scientific science advances and ways to forensic, you know, archaeology and forensic sciences advances. It's one of those things that, you know, we'll never know 100%.
Yeah.
Unless Jesus comes down from heaven and says, oh, yeah, that was mine. Sorry, I should have thrown that away.
Right.
In the medical waste or whatever.
Right.
Right. You know, we'll never know for 100,000% for sure.
Yeah.
Whether what it is, you know, if it's a genuine thing or not. But what it is it's an object of faith that it gives people hope in their beliefs, and it gives them a touchstone for their faith. So, you know, it's considered a holy relic because of that. And it's a fascinating relic, whether, you know, whatever, regardless of
whatever,
its origin.
Whoever it is, whatever it did,
it's still
it's fascinating
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Hey, you know what we need?
What's that?
We need a new ad for our merch store.
Our merch store.
I've had a few people reach out to me and ask me, just how do we get What's Your Weird Story merch?
Huh. How do we get that What's Your Weird Story merch?
What's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot, myspreadshop.com.
That's what's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot, myspreadshop.com.
That's correct. Get in touch with us. Go buy some merch. We got some cool stuff.
Yeah, dude. And you know what? If any of our listeners out there has some really cool ideas or has some really cool What's Your Weird Story type art that they want to see on a t-shirt, get a hold of us. maybe it'll happen. Gosh, well, I mean,
what a year, huh?
Dude, there's so much, and we didn't even dust any off the first layer of stories for that. We didn't even talk about UFO stuff. This is the stuff that we just didn't even get near in our own conversations.
Yeah.
But it's been a fantastic year. It's been a great year for us here on the podcast. So many amazing guests, and we were so fortunate to have. And we're going to have a lot of them come back next year in 2025 to share more stories and some more just amazing stuff. And we already got some really incredible stories to kick off the new year with.
Yeah.
Right out of the barrel, man. We've got a two-parter that's just going to knock your socks off.
Yeah.
Just great stuff, incredible stuff. So we want to say so much how we appreciate you, Weirdsville, for being here and supporting us and listening and sharing the podcast. It's been a banner year, a fantastic year, one of the best years we've had, and we're hoping 2025 will top it even more.
Absolutely, man. It's been amazing, and it's going to continue to be amazing. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we can't wait to get 2025 kicked off.
Yep. And if you don't have a New Year's resolution, you can always do the one we always request upon you, is to join us, share your stories here on the podcast, or, wrangle one of your friends or family members, get them to share their stories, be part of Weirdsville in a whole new way, and just, like us, subscribe us, share the podcast. Let's make Weirdsville grow even larger and come on and share your stories. And let's have another fantastic year here on the What's Your Weird Story podcast. I want to say thank you so much to my dear friend Barry for being making us go this entire year, being part of the machine and making us sound great every week.
Well, thank you, man. Thank you for all the work that you do. And it's been a blast. It's been great.
Yep. The thing I look forward to most every week is sharing time with you guys.
Absolutely.
So we will see you next time. Happy New Year. Happy 2025. Until then, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.